Welcome, everyone, to the Lighter Mind Podcast. In the Lighter Mind, we explore spirituality, personal growth, trauma, recovery, and the path to wholeness. The Lighter Mind Podcast is not intended to diagnose or treat any forms of mental illness. We are not licensed therapists unless otherwise noted, and these are experiential conversations. Welcome back to another episode of the Lighter Mind Podcast. My name is Kyle, and I have Alan and Crow here with me this afternoon. All right, so we're going to do something a little bit different. For one, Mr. Crow had an experience. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. Was it last week?
Last week.
Yeah, last week, where he got to go speak at a mental health symposium kind of thing, and we're going to pick his brain on that, and then Alan Crow and I, and then I'm gonna try to get Mr. McCray on here. For those of you who watched the episode with McCray, we're going to be diving into a little something special, a little workshop for the boys here. And so we're going to dive into a little bit of that. But I wanted to pass it over to you, Crow, and, you know, just see, just tell us, like, what that was like and what you covered. I know you were talking about the hero's journey, you know, which is one of my favorite things on the entire planet. So what was that like? What'd you learn?
Man, it was a great experience. I spoke last year for the first time. And then I spoke this year, and, you know, last year, it's one of those things where it's like just, it's all nerves. You know, you're running on high octane and just adrenaline and nerves and just trying to get through it, not make any mistakes and, you know, put the material out there. And this year, I used the same format as I did last year, but I had additional things that I kind of wanted to highlight and focus on. And throughout the talk, and it's about an hour, 15 minutes, and then about another 15 for questions and whatnot. And to be honest with you guys, I didn't even look at it from last year. I didn't really study. I didn't really prepare. I knew basically in my head of heads what I really wanted to present and how I wanted it to go. And I a lot of visualization throughout, you know, getting prepared for this. And it's always, every year, it's, you know, and every time that we do groups, you understand this, Kyle, that you're in front of people, and yeah, there's a mental preparation to be ready for that. But at the same time, it's like this is kind of what we do, and boy, I just got up and started going, and I think it was really, really solid and really good, and I was told it was better than last year, and I touched on everything I wanted to touch on. And it was really cool, and it felt so fluid, and it felt so smooth as far as the presentation part, and everything that I wanted to nail, the points, I nailed it. I did bring them up. I didn't forget. And afterwards, I started to think, and I got a lot of great feedback from it, which was very, very cool. And the following days of the symposium, people were, you know, stopping me and commenting on it. And it was very, very neat. Good, great feedback. But I started to think about it more and process later in the back up in the room. And I started thinking, man, I really need to use this next year. Yes, I will do this next year. Given the opportunity, I will do it again. But I need to push myself. I need to push myself and press in a little further in terms of a very unique message. You know, I could, I really, self-criticism comes in, but in a good way, in a very good way. It's like, okay, we've gotten past the public speaking, the venues, seen size of the rooms, and beyond that now, and that's not the issue. The issue now for me, it was a real growth experience that I realized is I could go further, and I have more to say. On a more personal note, that's more unique and off-spinning than what I've been really conveying in the past, and it's more of a niche thing, and I need to find that and bring that more up. So, in terms of the whole experience, it's like, wow, that really flew by. No nerves, no butterflies. But beyond all of that, Crow, we can do better is what I was saying. We can go further. And so that was a really, really cool sort of not critical criticism, but, hey, this is getting fun. And it's getting more exciting and... But I never would have had that had I not done last year. And so to see the whole experience and to really feel the whole experience and get beyond that first phase, you know. So once we are so fearing of the experience, I realized it's like now you're starting to get to the point where you can bring expression and creativity, more creativity, to that thing that you found to be so scary and so, you know, how do I make it through it? Well, now we're beyond that. And so now we're starting to play a little more. And I need next year, and as I continue to think in terms of all of this, it's what do you have to say? What do you really have to say? And how can you bring that more to the presentation? And so it was really a really cool experience for me in terms of personal growth and in terms of really seeing myself grow, I guess. You know that feeling. Alan, you remember this feeling because we were in bands together as kids, where you get beyond the nerves of the first stage and the stage fright, and you get beyond that, and it's like, wow, now we're starting to play. And that's how it felt to me. And so it was, you know, to some of our viewers, that may seem like, well, that's nothing. You should have done that from the get-go. But it takes some of these inner barriers, these inner walls that first challenge us that we think are such big hurdles. We need to get beyond those. And the things that scare us the most, we need to lean into. Right, Kyle? I mean, hero's journey.
Yeah.
It's moving beyond what was our big dragon, our big demon. And so it was, to me, really pushing beyond that. It was really cool. And it gave me a lot of self-confidence. It reaffirmed self-confidence. And it's like, okay, this is what we need to work on next time.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
you
know? That's interesting because I was just thinking about the first show we ever played, and I picked you up. And we loaded we had my guitars and amps and stuff. I guess we'd already set up, but we went to Wendy's. And I still remember, I mean, that was 40 years ago. I remember it like yesterday. And you were so nervous, you know? Like, I was like, whatever. And I've always been like, I hated speaking in front of people, but for some reason, I got this mindset in, these people are coming to see us, right? And we just go and do our job, you know, and over time, you know, we got more and more confident with it. And then once I got into brewing and I started doing talks at conferences, you know, and I remember I did a talk with a guy about brewing Belgian beers. I did the first half, he did the second. And I just got up there, and number one, I always kind of try to diffuse everything with a little humor, you know, make everyone laugh. It gets you feeling a little calmer with some kind of, plus I'm a smartass, so it's easy for me to, you know, say, make people laugh. And then, you know, I did my hour talk, and it just was, like, kind of winged it like you did. I mean, I had PowerPoint or whatever. And then the guy after me, the whole time I was watching, and his hand was like this. He was holding on the podium, just shaking like a leaf. And I was just like, you know, he made it through, but you could just tell he was, like, on the verge of fainting. And then, you know, we'd do these beer dinners, and sometimes, you know, I mean, that talk was, like, in front of 500 people or something. I'm like, whatever. And then I did beer dinners. We'd have 100 people, and I would just get up and talk about, you know, food and beer pairing, you know, the cleansing the palate, how things work together. And my assistant, brewer at the time, is so nervous at talking in front of people. Like, it was just getting up to say hello was almost putting him into shock. You know, I'm like, who cares? Again, these people are here, A, to enjoy food and beer and learn about it. And you're part of the one of the courses, so just get up and do it. So it's cool to be able to do that, you know. And I get that a lot of people can't, like,
yeah,
you know.
Public speaking is
You know. And I was talking to my mom about it one day. She was very big in Toastmasters back in the day, which is like you know. And she's always like, "You should do that. You know, that'd be something fun for you now that you don't work." And I'm like, "Yeah, okay, maybe." But I want to know what you learned from other talks. Like, did you have go to any and be like, "Wow"? You know, like
I did go to one or two other talks, and they were both very, very good. Very good. One was on boundaries for us in this field. That was really cool. But what are we doing to take care of ourselves and self-care?
That's important.
Very, very. And she was a very well-known gal in town here in Colorado Springs, and I really, really enjoyed her talk, and it was great meeting her finally. Big in the peer recovery coach scene. Started this about almost a decade ago, so I've known the name around town for years, and she was just wonderful. Actually, her name is Sparkle Lindsay.
That's who I was going to ask if that was her.
It was her. And she
she's a killer, man. She's a killer.
She was. And she's a big proponent of the peer recovery coach. And anyway, that was really, really a good one about what are we doing. And she's lived the experience of not taking care of herself and wearing herself to pieces. And then almost ending up in the hospital. So that was very, very cool. Another one that I got to see was another presenter did spirituality in recovery. And he, in his outfit from Monarch Shores, I'm going to throw that name out there, recovery, because they do a tremendous job. And their whole facility is very spirituality forward.
Really,
for us and our recovery center, it's a big proponent, and I'm a big piece of that, but not to the very grounded way that his presentation was. And what was really reassuring to me, Alan, in your question is that as he was talking, there was so many times where our talks just overlapped. He said the same thing, used the same expressions, talking about becoming the hollow bone, you know, the hollow bone to spirit. And that was one that I just had to laugh at, because it's like, yep, I said that very expression, you know. Or as Rumi says, become the hollow flute, and the spirit is the wind that plays your song. And it was just beautiful throughout his talk, and I got to finally meet him, because I have been hearing about this gentleman for years. And some of the clients that actually come through, there's that word, some of the folks that come through our center knew him and told me how much I resembled him. So it was cool to finally meet him. and hear him speak, and I love that as well. I didn't get to too many after that, to be honest with you. I made it about 2 days in that thing, Kyle. I'm telling you, you get peopled out. You know what I'm saying? And I had a certain bandwidth that I could only handle so much, and then I had to. So 2 days of that many people and that much energy was enough for me. And I really had to get out.
Yeah, like I can imagine.
I did meet a lot of great people, though. It was a great opportunity.
That's good. I want to back it up to what you were talking about at the beginning about, like, kind of overcoming some of that anxiety or, you know, some of that fear that you go. Like, the way that I interpreted that is that the more comfortable that you get doing something, the more authentically you can show up doing that thing. Yeah. And so it sounds like you're getting to that point, because when you public speaking is such a challenging thing. And I think back to, like, when we first started the podcast, like, nerve wracking. I mean, it was just like, you know, you're hyper fixated on saying the right thing, not saying, you know, taking yourself too damn seriously. At least that's what I was doing, you know, to the point where I have that tendency to make things about me when they're not about me, you know, and that's where a lot of, like, my anxiety lies. But when I'm doing that, like, it's hard for me to tap into my authentic story. It's hard for me to reach down and talk about, like, you know, kind of like what you were talking about, of like, okay, like, so you brought the message, but now how does that relate to you and your story? How do you go down a little bit, you know, deeper into that experience? And that anxiety, and, like, for me, like, that taking myself too seriously and making sure I don't say the wrong thing, you know, like, that prevents me from actually going a little bit deeper into whatever that is, you know, which I think also blocks a lot of creativity. It kind of keeps you on that surface level of, like, kind of what you're getting into. And it sounds like you were able to familiarize yourself with the setting and the people and the energy and, like, you know, what you're there to do, and were able to kind of start, you know, taking some of the armor off, you know, to be able to, like, that next time that you show up, like, you know, it's going to be even more authentic, more creative, a little bit deeper down that rabbit hole, you know, because I don't know. It sounds like you're able to be a little bit more vulnerable with it at this point, you know, which is huge.
Right. And I think what you're absolutely nailing on the head here, Kyle, is flow.
Mm.
Is how do we get to our flow state quickest?
Yeah.
And I found the ability to enter into it right away.
So can we back it up, and can you define what does flow mean to you?
It's very flowy.
Very flowy.
There's an epiphany.
That's such a bullshit answer. Oh my gosh.
Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, who is sort of the godfather of flow, and wrote that book. I think 60s, 70s?
No, I think it's... I've read that
book. Yeah, look, check that one up there.
Jamie, I'm a fact checker.
Look Jamie. Can you bring that one up? Whenever he wrote that book, but he went around the world and he asked people, what could describe that state? And they said it's very flowy. It is a state where you are outside of you. And you just allow yourself to be, and there are certain elements that trigger flow that they have studied, and one of them is risk. There has to be a certain amount of risk involved. Mm. There has to be an extreme amount of focus involved, and there has to be passion involved. So you have to love what you're doing. You have to know that there's some risk involved in it. There's some skin in the game. There's something at stake that you have to rise above a level of yourself. And Yeah, you just bring the passion, and you get out of the way of yourself. And in a state of flow, they used to think that flow was all 100% of your brain going. It's actually the opposite, what they figured out with the flow state. And it's actually your brain, your prefrontal cortex shuts down. And you just get into a state. It's almost a meditative state, if you will. And that's why, you know, there's descriptors to the state of flow, right? I mean, time passes by, you know, things that you think are minutes, hours go by, you know, because you're in the zone. The athletes call it the zone. Comedians call it the forever box. Or I could just be there forever, and I just felt like a blink of an eye. And no, you were up there for an hour and 15 minutes, you know, because you love what you're doing, and you're getting out of the way. And that prefrontal cortex is where we hold time. And time, space, time relationship, it's also where we have the inner critic. The inner critic shuts down. It's no longer there. So there is no objective sense of reality. It's just a doing. It's just a becoming. It's just being. And that's, everybody in the world has experienced that state at one time or another, a flow.
Yeah.
You know.
Isn't there something to do with, like, neurotransmitters in there, too?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All that's the most addictive property about flow is that, you know, normally in recovery, we're always dealing with, too, norepinephrine or oxytocin and dopamine, you know, the drive, the molecule of drive. But in the state of flow, all five receptors are now on fire. And that is why you come down the base of a ski hill run, and it's like, whoo, you know, your friends go, dude, how did you dodge those trees? And they say, what trees? You know, I can't, it just felt like a minute long run or a 30 second run. And they say, no, that was a 15 minute run. Dude, you know, so yeah, it's big, and let's do it again. Let's do that again, because all five are on fire. And yeah,
that's, I love that.
It becomes, they don't like saying it becomes addictive,
but it can be.
it can be. And I realized too over the years, Alan, that I became addicted to flow. Before I ever found alcohol, I was addicted to flow state, to a point where you can play and manipulate with the things that are most frightening. And I think that's, yeah, in all.
All right, so the book came out in 1990.
What? No.
Sorry, that's what it says.
Okay. I believe it.
Time, Crow got it such in the flow state. He time machine back to 1954.
Yeah. I'm making it up right, now as
so
I go.
Here is the summary of flow state. Optimal human experience. Flow occurs when we are fully absorbed in challenging activities that match our skills, leading to both peak performance and deep fulfillment. And then there's a whole bunch more on there. So to me, it's not that easy. When I go mountain biking, there's one spot on this trail that I really like where I always can get in flow state. Like, it's just effortless, and it's windy and rocky, but for some reason, but then I'll get out of it. Like, I can't stay in extended flow ever. Like, there's zero time that I can be. It's maybe like a mile of trail, maybe 2 miles, and then it'll, like, I'll snap out of it. Or, like, something will knock me out of it. Like, I hit flow, but then my pedal hits a rock, and my seat flies into my nutsack, and I'm like, ooh, you know, and then it's over, right?
Yep.
So, and I think with other, maybe with other activities, it's easier. Like, skiing, probably back when I skied, was not bump runs, because I sucked at those, but, like, big, like, you know, groomed blues or even groomed blacks where you can just kind of do big swoopy turns. I could get in flow, but you know, it, to me, it's really hard to stay in flow state. Like, I derail very easily from it.
Maybe you just need more risk.
Yeah.
Like what, that point in the bike path.
Yeah.
You know you can just bite it if you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
So that may be what.
But I don't think more, I mean, the per that thing, you know, it's a challenge. There are certain challenges at my age that if I wreck on some of that stuff, you know, the guy died in Palmer Park our age a couple of years ago. Rode off a rock thing, landed on his chest, freaking instant heart attack, death. So I'm not willing to go to that level of risk for flow state. Like, I'm not going to die for flow state.
Yeah.
Like, it's playing Russian roulette. Well, I'm in flow state, so I'm just going to spin this revolver, and I know it's not going to blow my head off because I'm in flow state. That's pie in the sky thinking that it's not going to kill you because you got the flow going. So I think, you know, there's a level of skill where you're comfortable, and challenge, you want a little challenge, but I don't think you want to go from, like, I've never climbed a rock, but I'm going to go do Half Dome without any ropes, because I'll get in the state.
You're not Alex Honnold.
Right. Yeah. You know, eventually, he's going to fall to his death. I mean, that's just the truth, you know?
Yeah.
It's playing Russian roulette. Eventually, that bullet lines
up. I think to that point, too, Alan, I think they say 5% of your skill level. Just 5% more of your skill level.
Yeah, well, and I think pushing, challenging yourself is the key to any kind of growth. I mean, like, if you just do the same talk over and over at this thing, it's going to get boring for you and other people.
Yeah.
So I think you need to push the challenge. And then I was thinking, as Kyle was talking about anxiety and all that, I read this thing the other day. It was very interesting about anxiety and depression. And it was basically, if you keep any secrets, like, it's just going to wear on you and make you anxious. And, like, basically, you have to be able to tell everything to your mom. You know, like, be able, so whatever you've done, like, you know, and I've done some pretty awful things when I was younger. You know, I'm like, oh, well, it's still pretty hard. It'd be hard to go up, well, you know, Mom, I did this, this, and this. And she'd be like, what kind of kid did I raise? Good God, you are such a sweet boy, you know. But, you know, so I think the challenge is good. But I think knowing your limitations is also good. Like, I seriously.
Absolutely.
There's this rock in Palmer Park that I've never launched off. It's probably 10 feet. And then the landing is not very, it's very flat. So if you don't land it perfectly, you get hurt. And I remember years ago, we went, and this friend of mine went off of it and just ate shit, hit his head so hard, got up, had no idea who we were, no idea where he was. You know, and then I was tasked to get him back home because he didn't even know where he lived. I mean, he had such a bad concussion. So I don't think, you know, so I think you've got to temper your expectations with the flow state. Like, I agree that it's a great thing. And, you know, you don't really know when you get in it. You kind of know. I think for me, I know more when I get out of it. Like, you know, I'll be in flow state, and then when I get shaken out of it, I'm always like, wow, that was good. That was flow state. How do I get back? And then I can never get back because I'm trying too hard.
Yeah. I'm almost taking it from, like, a different perspective, as opposed to, like, looking at it as, like, what's something that I can challenge myself with. I look at it as, like, how can I engage in more things that I'm passionate about and more things that I actually care about? Because there's been moments where I've entered flow state, and I wouldn't necessarily define it as, like, risk, but I would say that they were relatively, like, they were pushing, you know, they were challenging for my mind, you know, to a certain extent, where, like, I was really, like, being stretched, and I was having to use, like, problem solving, but it was something that, like, I genuinely cared about the outcome of it, and I had, like, I was fully engaged, like, creatively, and it was, you know, like I was saying, like, it was making me stretch that creative nature that I have, and so I think that, like, for me, when I think about, like, how can I engage in a flow state, it's like, how can I do more things that I give a shit about? And I think that that's something that, you know, like, in the society that we have nowadays, where, you know, the 40-hour work week and kind of living for the weekend is kind of like the norm in society, you know, this great illusion of the American dream. You know, I just think that, like, the more and more people that I talk about and I ask them, like, hey, like, you know, when's the last time that you did something good for yourself, or when's the last time you engaged in some type of creative hobby, or you did something that, like, you really enjoyed doing? And I just get a blank stare back at me, and I'm like, so, you know, so your whole schedule is that you go to work, you come home, you fall asleep, you get up, you go to work, you come home, you fall asleep. You know, it's like, okay, so your whole life has very, you know, very little meaning in it. And I'm kind of in that phase where, like, I'm trying to engage myself in like, you know, creating more meaning, because I'm always, not always, but when I'm engaged, like, fully engaged in something that I care about, like, my flow state turns on, you know, especially if it really challenges me kind of, like, mentally. And I don't know. And I think that this kind of goes back to what you were talking about, Crow. You were talking about, like, you know, you wanted to dig a little bit deeper, you know, into, like, some of the topics and stuff that you were talking about. So, like, in that is, like, you are challenging yourself. You're stepping outside of your comfort zone. And I think as soon as we step outside of that comfort zone, like, that allows flow to be able to kind of, like, take hold of us, you know, because, like, we have to be hyper-focused and engaged in, like, whatever we're doing that's stepping outside of our comfort zone, you know? So in realistically, I think it's just kind of stepping into vulnerability, you know, like, how do we engage more vulnerable and more vulnerably in activities in our life?
That's it. That's it. And that's, of course, what we always speak to is on the hero's journey is overcoming that fear. That fear, and primarily the fear of what will people think of me.
That's a big one.
Go beyond that to find our bliss. And we need to stay engaged with to come back to your bliss as a practice, because neurologically what it's doing is it's altering that neuroplasticity that says, hey, this is where I belong. So when I'm not on the ski slope, when I'm not playing piano or writing or painting or drawing, doing something where I get into my flow, then it translates. It translates into my everyday life of this is familiar territory now, because I can speak to people in conversations that used to, in the past, frightened me. I can engage with strangers. I can start doing things that challenge me a little bit more. Neuroplasticity now is strengthening that. It's also strengthening my nervous system, which we're going to talk in future shows about more. But it's strengthening my nervous system that says we're safe, it's okay. And so I'm building that sense of authenticity and an autonomy in that vulnerable state, that I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being me and bringing more of me to the world in that state. And so it translates if we follow our bliss. And it's like courage, you know, courage gym that we talk about, right? And it's going one step past it, one step, just one small step, you know. Things that used to frighten me no longer frighten me, you know. It's you are moving outside of that comfort zone and stretching yourself just a little bit more to get familiar with the unfamiliar and say, I'm still safe, I'm going to try this. And to your point of what, you know, when you ask people that, no, never done that, no, won't do that, you close it into such a familiar world after a while that resilience isn't built and we become stagnant. And then my bliss and who I was and my dream, it's no longer there. And I wouldn't dare try what doing that, you know, like I did when I was a kid. You know, when we were younger, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, we would try anything, but for a lot of folks, so it's just kind of reengaging with that back to how I felt when I was at that performance level. And there is a performance level to it.
Right. Well, I think, you know, obviously there's physiological limitations. You know, there's zero chance at my age with one gimpy leg that I'm going to get in flow state if I join the NBA, you know.
Like me and LeBron. That's
it's going to suck. So, I mean, I think for me the flow state is, you know, it's got to be a something you're passionate about, that you like, that you're willing to be challenged with, you know. I mean, I don't, like, if the challenge is, you know, I remember in high school, I had to take basketball for a freaking PE thing, and I'm like, this short white dude, you know, and all these guys, Styles, you suck at basketball. And I'm like, well, you suck at life. And you're probably going to be in prison by the time you're 21 because the only thing that matters to you is basketball. And fuck you, you know. And so, you know, to me it was like, but it was traumatic, you know. You guys know my high school history of being bullied by a bunch of fuckheads. There I'm swearing a lot more today.
Triggered.
I wish I could be in flow state with everything all the time. It happens when I'm working on cars a lot. Like, I'll just be under there, and Phoebe's like, you've been under there for like 8 hours straight. And I'm like, have I? You know? So it's, you know, it is follow your bliss to some level, you know. But I think you can't have super high expectations that you can get into flow state with anything you try. And I think that's, I think people get maybe frustrated when they do something that, A, they're not physically able to, or mentally, you know. Like, not everyone's going to go and do complex math for fun, you know. Like my little brother, or younger brother, he's not little, you know, he and his nerdy friends would sit around and do math equations for fun. And they'd be there for hours. And then they would, like, get toothpicks and little rubber, like, hose stuff and chop it up. And they would do this math equation. And then they would build what the equation was, because it was, like, 3D math kind of. I can barely add. So, and I just sit there like, wow, those guys are nerds. Now they're all like gazillionaires. So, whatever. They had the last laugh on that front. So, you know, and that was their thing. That was their flow state. So I think, you know, you got to find what is important to you to get into flow state. Like,
it has to be important.
Yeah, it has to have meaning. You know, like, if it doesn't have meaning, what's the point? Like, you know, there's so many things in life that you can do and so many options that it needs to be meaningful. That's like my brewing career was meaningful. It was, I loved it, you know.
Which also speaks to how can I share this? How can I share this with the world, with other people?
Right.
And that brings the meaning. And now, down the road, you have purpose with it.
Right.
And that is the real, to the return on the journey, that's the return, is this is what I'm bringing back, you know? You take these skiers, the famous skiers, or, you know, skateboarders, you take anything, and how can they bring that back? And you think, well, it's just playing drums. You know, how can I share that? Well, look at them. I mean, look at all the greats, you know, from Neil Peart to Mick Fleetwood. Come on. It's just like, it seems so silly, but it's not, because somebody out there wants what you know and how you've learned how to do that. And i.e. your little brother. I mean, my God. Yeah. I mean, it's bringing that to the greater web of being in a universal way, which is really, really the beautiful thing. That's why we're here. So.
Yeah. I like it. All right. So, Mr. Allen.
Yes.
I wanted to take it over to Claim Your Power. And I wanted you to, so you've been through this. Yes. Can you give us a runabout for what the hell we're about to get into here? Because I don't know what to expect.
Is this going to turn into a book study group?
I think that's exactly, I told my wife that's what we were doing. She's like, oh, you're having a book study with the guys? I was like, fuck off. Yes, that's exactly what we're doing.
Are you going to knit too?
Yeah. You know, hold hands and sing Kumbaya. Yeah.
And cry about how hard our lives are.
Yep.
Yeah, so I did Claim Your Power probably in 2018 or 19, so a few years back. It was very challenging because you really have to, A, be honest and dig deep. And as you work through it, you know, it's based on the hero's journey, the whole concept of it. So it's a 40-day thing. And, you know, I think I've said this in plenty of other podcasts. I would lock myself in the guest bedroom to do my little journaling because you have to, like, read and then journal. And then, you know, it digs up a lot of stuff that you really have been suppressing your whole life. And, you know, you come out the end with what your purpose is. So, at least according to this. And mine, which I laughed at then, and now I'm like, okay, I get it, was learn how to love yourself and show the world or show other people the peace that can come from that, like the inner peace or whatever. And at the time, I'm like, I can't believe I did 40 days of this to find that out. Like, you know, and having just finished Mastin Kipp's most recent book, The Reclaim Your Nervous System, I think it's the most recent, the whole thing in that, he's just talking about learning how to love yourself. So I'm like, huh, okay, so I kind of get it. And, you know, so that was really kind of what I worked on for a while, was like, learning, you know, and I said this before in podcasts, I couldn't look in a mirror and say I love you to myself. It was impossible, you know, like it took forever. And I always tell people, ask people if they can do that. And so many people are like, no way, dude. So, so it'll be very interesting to work through that. I was going to do it a second time. So my buddy who I love him, who lives in Spain, that came up in our running from your problems thing. He did it once and then did it a second time, and he wanted me to do it the second time at the same time so we could sit and talk about it. But I didn't at the time. I was like, yeah, no, I don't need to do that. So it's been long, and it was only maybe a year after we had done it. So I don't think I was ready at that point. Now that it's been a number of years, it'll be interesting to see. I believe that on Mastin Kipp's website, you sign up through the book, and then you can type your thing if you don't want to, if you don't know how to write, apparently, and only can type. So I think I can access that and see my notes from before compared to now. Although I don't know if I want to do it until we're done, because I don't want what I had said before to taint who I am now. You know, if that makes sense. So I think, you know, it'll be very cathartic, maybe. Maybe it'll be nothing new. Maybe it'll be like, I'm not getting anything out of this. I've already worked through all this. But to me, at the time, it was very, very valuable, and we've brought it up a lot of times that we wanted to do this. So I think it'll be good, and I know you were hoping to get McRae in on this. It would be interesting to even see if any listeners wanted to do it at the same time and just hear what we said and compared to, you know, how it affects them. So there it is.
Bom, bom. Yeah. And there we go. Yeah.
By Mastin Kipp.
Yeah, I've been in this realm of like circumambulation lately. So I've been, well, I guess circumambulation and like individuation is kind of like what I've been doing some shadow work this last month. And so this is, came to some pretty like profound. I actually had like a really, really big weekend in terms of like some deeper truths that I was able to find out. And I'm kind of like on, I got that inertia going right now that like I just want to dig. I want to dig and see if I can come to some deeper truths. And I don't know. I'm really striving for that like individuation and like self-actualization right now. Again, I mean, this is nothing new in my recovery, but I think that since I moved out here, I think a lot of my journey has just been like finding my balance or just like finding my feet. I think I was a little bit wobbly when I came out here and not really knowing anyone, and there's just a lot of question marks, a lot of anxiety, and I don't know. I think I'm starting to really re-engage with like, what can I learn about myself? And then how can I bring that back to other people? And, I don't know. I'm excited for this. And I think that something like this, I think, is so important. I was talking with McCray, or we talked about a little bit on the podcast when he was on here. I'm really, really interested in getting together with like a group of guys and like going on this journey together, you know, like having the, you know, which is one of the reasons that I love doing this podcast so much. But I think that there's something so profound about like a community that is striving to be like the best version of themselves that they can possibly be. And like, I'm hoping for myself one day that I'm able to like take a lot of the knowledge that I have to be able to like create something with it, you know, to be able to like set up like a, you know, like Alan, you were talking about like, you know, cooking up some steaks on the grill and sitting around and having kind of the, you know, the book club in the back, or, you know, doing something like that.
The caveman book club,
you know. But I think I'm really striving towards, I want to call that's my bliss, you know, is really just like, what are other ways that I can show up and help other people. And I think that when I get to that place of wanting to help people, I stop myself and I ask myself, okay, what is preventing me from actually showing up and being as helpful as I could possibly be? And that's when I usually kind of go down the rabbit hole. And so I'm excited to see, you know, what can kind of come out of this kind of stuff. And haven't done, I guess, like a personal kind of inventory, you know, something like this in a while. So I think I'm excited.
You know, I'm excited for you on that journey too, Kyle, because, you know, ever since we used to work together, this was years ago, and we would always meet, you and I, at the coffee shop. And I said, you got to meet my buddy Alan, you know, because we're talking the same language here. And I remember meeting with you, and that was, what, four years ago easily, that we would meet at the coffee shop and just have these talks, all things spirituality, self-growth, you know, just growth in general. And I remember then your yearning for this road, this path, that you wanted to do this, and I haven't seen you stop yet. And then thus the forming of this podcast and the name of it and everything. So I don't know what's stopping you from doing it on an individual level. If you can get on cameras and do a podcast and create this thing that you pulled Alan and I into, I don't know what's preventing you, but I love that you're working on working inside out, not outside in. And that's the
been there, done that. Doesn't work.
Yeah. It doesn't work to do it alone.
No.
We need community. We're communal animals, and we need to grow and go and grow together. And I like your thinking.
Yeah.
I really do.
I think it'll be cool because, so Alan, the premise of this book is, I mean, just the cliff notes that I've kind of looked at is it's centered around dissolving any internal barriers, so that, I mean, is that, you know, looking at some traumas and like some things that are blocking you from showing up authentically?
I think it's,
or
basically, you know, getting through these traumas that are holding you back, right? Like things you're not even aware of, you know, like. A lot of mine was abandonment because, you know, when my dad left when we were kids, he didn't even say goodbye. He just, like, left a business. I think I've said this, a lawyer's business card in my mom and dad's bathroom. And a week later, you know, she was like, well, I better call this guy because your dad hasn't come home for a week. And he's like, yeah, your husband wants a divorce, you know, because he was a coward. So, but, you know, when you're 12 years old, you're like, oh, my dad left because he hates me, you know. So I had this,
right,
you know, this massive abandonment fear, like, and it's tainted everything until I really, well, went and saw Polly, who hopefully we'll have on the podcast when my wife and I did the marriage counseling through her, you know, learning that, you know, how to talk to each other in a way that wasn't going to lead to a fight immediately or assume things, you know, like I just assumed that I'm unlovable and she's going to leave me because I'm fucking unlovable. My dad left me when I was a kid and I'm unlovable. So it made me really work through a lot of those kind of abandonment trauma, and just other, all your, you know, just every day you do, you know, reading and writing and thinking about your trauma and things like that, that you've dealt with, and just kind of chiseling that shit out of your life, right? Because it's really kind of in you, you know? Like, you're not aware, you know? We just live our lives, and most people are totally unaware of how all of that stuff has affected your relationships now. So, to me, you know, like we, in our little intro, the path to wholeness, it really helps with the path to wholeness in my mind. Like, this is just a very interesting journey to be on. So it'll be really fun to do it and see how it affects all of us. And, you know, and the good thing is, you know, with us, the three of us, we can be pretty, we're honest with each other about stuff, you know, like, you know, I'm like, well, I don't want these guys to know this about me. You know, fucking, who cares? You know, I am who I am. You know, I don't, you know, people don't like me. Sorry, I don't care. You know, and that's, but that's kind of been my way I've gone through life. Like, I don't know, if you, you know, whatever, I'm not going to change for you to like me. If you don't like me who I am, then pound sand, goodbye. So, which, you know, the old, especially the older you get, like, well, that's fine. That's a good way. You know, when you're younger, maybe not, but I don't know. I just, I never had time for bullshit, you know, so. So I think it'll be good to go through it and just honestly, like, cathartically vomit out all that blackness that's in our souls, you know, or whatever that we're unaware of. So,
yep.
Yeah. So, so it'll be, it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting to do it collectively because, you know, the first time I did it was very individual. Like, I mean, I shut the door to the room so my wife couldn't even see me in there, right? Like, and and this is going to be a much a public. it's a public humiliation. So, no, I don't. You know, whatever. Yeah. I don't think any of it's humiliating. You know, what happened to you is what happened to you, and you know, I think the more you can be open about it, the less trauma or stress or anxiety you carry. Like, this shit happened to me, and that, whatever, you know, and how I deal with it is really the key. Like, if you just sit and repress that, or you get the whole victim mindset, like, you know, oh, dad left, you know, and everyone's gonna leave me, then you're gonna be stuck on that little wheel forever and be like, you know, that happened. And it really wasn't to you. It was to him. It was his decision, you know. Right. And, you know, a 12-year-old brain can't really contemplate that, you know. So I think, well, it'll be interesting to see where we all come how we come through this and how we are after the 40 days in the desert, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, but we'll have to, you know, because we're not going to talk every day, and it's an everyday thing. We'll have to kind of take some side notes in my mind to what, like, this was pretty important, like this day, like Tuesday, whatever day of the month. This session was very important to me because it really spoke to me, or really, like, because some of them probably aren't going to be any epiphany. Like, you'll be like, yeah, I know this, but other ones you'll be like, holy shit, right? So,
And this is a cool opportunity too, Kyle, for our viewers to get involved and follow along as well. Right. To also, yeah, like, hey, type some notes in the comments or whatever and say, man, can you speak into this point? Because this is what really affected me. This is what really hit home. Let us know. This would be really, really cool to hear some feedback and comments about what people are getting along this journey as well. And without having to bare your souls in a comment thing back to us, but we sure would like to hear that. I would really be curious to know if we're grazing up against the same sore spots, you know?
Well, I was just thinking about listeners, you know, the beauty and the horrible thing about the internet is anonymity. Like, you know, you get all these people that comment like, yeah, you suck, blah, 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 because they know you're not going to go smack them in the teeth, right? Because they're, you know, wherever. They're probably in their mom's basement eating Cheetos and drinking Mountain Dew and, you know, 700 pounds and like, you don't know shit, you know, and then they're going back to playing whatever stupid video game they're into. So, you know, but the upside, the other side is, you know, people can be like, hey, this really spoke to me. They're not saying their name, where they're from. They're just like, so right, it gives them, lowers the veil, right? Like, they don't have to say who they are, but they can be like, wow, this really spoke to me.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel absolutely that I felt this pain and whatever, and I'm glad you guys shared it because it made me realize I have this same thing or same kind of trauma, and now I'm going to work towards being a better person because I lived what you guys are talking about. So that's, to me, the good side of anonymity. You know?
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, Kyle, back to your point, too, is that, what's the risk if we don't, at some point in our life, do this work? I mean, then you are a walking skin bag of your subconscious, and you're pretty soon that not only inhabits who you've been, who you think you've been. As Carl Jung said, right? He said, you know, if we don't make the subconscious conscious, it will continue to run our life, and we will call it fate. Mm-hmm. So there's parts of us that, you know, sometimes when no one's around, a dialogue might kick up in your head that isn't even you. It's your trauma talking to prevent you from taking chances, taking risks, following your bliss, being who you really, really are. And it's just simply the voice of your nervous system calling you back to play it safe. Mm. And you've been living like that, and you think it's you. And it's not even you. So that's a really sad way to go through life. And if
it
you
is.
Don't, as Jung said, if you don't confront your shadow by the age of 30, you will be confronted by it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's typically how it goes. And I think it's really, for anyone who hasn't been engaged in any of this type of work, it's hard to explain just how valuable it actually is to humans, you know, and because everyone on the planet has been through something, you know, and I think that it's all relative, you know, but one person's suffering does not negate the suffering of another. And so I think that And trauma shows up in such an interesting way in, you know, the way that we process information, and resentment shows up in an interesting way in how we process information, and the way that we view ourselves shows up in the way that we process information. And so we get to this point over our lives where, like, we're not actually seeing life the way that it is. You know, we're seeing it through, like, I know, Alan, you don't like my verbiage around seeing it through, like, the warped perception, you know, because that, you know, there is a negative connotation to that. But I think about, like, there is some type of, like, distortion. I know, like, for me, you know, like, if I'm triggered by something that happened in the past, you know, it's like I'm not actually seeing the situation for what it is at this point. And until you go in and you start working on some of that stuff, it's hard to show up and be present with anything in life. You know, it's hard to really enjoy a sunset. It's hard to enjoy, like, an afternoon with a loved one. It's hard to really, like, you know, because you're not experiencing life for what it is you're experiencing for how it was at some point in the future or in the past, that, like, it, you know, and those moments don't exist anymore. And it's, but it's so, I try to tell people that this work is so, so important, you know, to stop running from whatever the hell you're running from and just, you know, put some pen to paper and ask yourself some difficult questions, you know, that you've been avoiding for your entire life, and then you're done with it. You know, and then it's like, you know, and then at some point, you know, the word that, you know, circumambulation, like, you come back to those deeper truths about some of those things, but they're not affecting your behavior in the same way that they have in the past. And, like, I don't know that, like, I love doing this shit. I'm like, I'm super glad that I got introduced to, you know, some of the step work and some of, you know, the inventory and some of the therapy and all the stuff that I, you know, was kind of forced on me in early recovery, because it really did reveal some of those deeper truths. I'm like, oh my God, like, I'm not, like, I'm showing up in a way that is counterproductive to me being a happy and healthy individual, you know? And I think that a lot of people, like, they don't even recognize that they're showing up in that way in life and that they're not being present. They're not be fully engaged with everything that, you know, that they could be fully engaged with. And so I don't know. I think this is going to be, I think it's going to be interesting. Alan, you said it's going to be fun a couple of times. I don't know if fun is the word, because I think it's going to suck, actually. It's going to be entertaining.
Yeah, I guess fun, maybe not the right word. Maybe enlightening, maybe.
You know,
challenging, but whatever, you know. I mean, it is kind of fun to challenge yourself and see.
Oh, yeah.
See what it is. I, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's all towards a greater goal of being whole, so. Mm. You know, I mean, you know, there's times like when I mountain bike, like climbing. I like to climb, actually, but, you know, sometimes I'm pedaling, especially when it's really hot, and I'm climbing up this one. There's this one thing, and it's just long in the sun, and you're like, this fucking sucks. This fucking sucks. Then you get to the top, and you're like, yeah, it wasn't that bad. And the next week you do it again, or the next day, you know, and then then you get to the highest point, and then you got the downhill, and you're like hauling ass, hopefully get into flow state. So, you know, it's all part of the journey. Like, the good part and the bad part end up making, it's yin and yang, you know, that you can't have all just this good, the good stuff all the time. So, and, you know, like, maybe you can, but it's how you frame it. Like, you know, like, I'll go with, I remember riding with a guy years ago, and he was just like, how much farther till we get to the top? And I was like, next corner. And then we do like 20 more corners. He's like, are you serious? How many are we to the top yet? I'm like, yeah, it's right around the bend. Because I knew if I said, we got 2 more hours of going up this road or trail uphill in the sun, he would have been like, no, I'm going home. So I'd just be like, yeah, right, it's just a little bit farther. Come on, buddy. He never came back to ride with us again. But, you know, it's how you frame it, right? Like, if you think something's going to suck, it's going to suck. Mm. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line. Like, when I injured my spine, you know, and, you know, I was going to the doctor, the workman's comp doctor, and I just had a good attitude about it all the time. I was just being a stoic. I'm like, well, this is my new reality, and I'm going to make the most of it. And I'm not going to stop riding my bike, and I'm going to find a way, even though my leg doesn't really work, to make this work, right? Mm-hmm. And she was like, I wish everyone had this attitude. She's like, 99% of people that have an injury like yours give up. And they're like, no. And they just, like, wallow in self-pity, you know? And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. And, you know, I'm going to give a shout-out to McCray about the Ellen Langer, the Harvard psychologist, because I'm reading her Mindful Body book right now. Mm-hmm. And it's very good for me because I always struggle with decision-making. Like, I have to, it's a paralysis by analysis. And she was talking about, you know, don't worry about making the right decision. Make your decision right, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I looked at the spine injury. I'm like, well, the decision was made for me. So how do I make this right? How do I make my life not that much different? You know, like, I'm just going to figure out some way to make it so that, A, I'm not feeling sorry for myself because, oh, poor me, my back got fucked up. Well, whatever, it happened. And so, you know, I'm kind of trying to, and she also looks at how, I would highly recommend this book. She talks about perception, you know, like if you see, like some people just see something and immediately assume that's what it is. Like, I think she talks about some people carrying stuff out of a house, right? And one person will be like, oh, well, they're getting robbed. Or someone else be like, oh, they're moving out or whatever. So, you know, it's kind of looking at things from a different perspective. Like, any situation can have a lot of different ways it's viewed, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, when I got injured, I was like, well, no, the way I'm viewing this is just a challenge to overcome. Not that, you know, and you know, it's something that happened to me. It was a fluke, and I'm not going to let it define who I am, you know.
That's huge.
Yeah,
it is. And it when we do this work, too, that speaks to our past. And as you do the work, then it's like, okay, wait a minute. The characters, the people, the places, they weren't these scary monsters that I thought this happened to me. They were doing the best. So they were doing the best they could at the time. Mm-hmm. And it's not, given what they knew and what they had and the way they were raised. So it, I think, should help us alleviate some of the anger, frustration we have towards them. It lifts that to a large degree. And that what I realized when I sobered up was that I was starting to, I was looking through my past with a different perspective. And I like that you mentioned perspective, because Kyle, this is what we're dealing with here, is the ability to reframe all of our cognitive biases that we have towards what we see and feel and think in this world right now at our ages, at any age, to reframe it so that, you know, as Dwayne Dyer says, you know, change the things you look at. And the things you look at change, right? So it's the ability to perspective what you're saying, Alan, about I need a different perspective to look at my past, my present, and my future. So, well, you know, in that order, right. I guess my past, my present, to a different way of reframing and talking to myself about my future.
Well, I think, you know, I was just thinking about the first time I did Claim Your Power, and it was right after my father had died. And I was like, well, I had written a letter to him about how much, you know, this is even before I started realizing all the trauma and all that, about how painful it was to be abandoned. And I never mailed it. I just burned it. I'm like, this will be cathartic. And then I remember as he was on his deathbed, his wife emailed me and said, hey, or texted, I can't remember, and said, your father is going to die in a couple days. and you should really come see him. And I said, no, you know what? I was a child when he left, and he never made any effort whatsoever to be my father. And I've worked through a lot of this trauma, gone to therapy to work through this, and I don't need to go back, you know. And maybe in hindsight I should have gone and said, hey, you fucked up, but I forgive you, you know. So I think I started the Claim Your Power right after that, and I think part of it was a way to, for me to work through those childhood traumas that were, you know, you know, not necessarily caused by him, but kind of, you know, it's, it wasn't malicious. It was just his selfishness brought that on.
Right.
So I think it was a way for me to work through that part of my life a lot. Like, I think that was, you know, there's a ton of little things, but I think for me that was the biggest wall that I had to break down, was dealing with that. So, so I think that'll, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens here.
Yeah, it's going to be really good stuff. You know, really good stuff.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah,
I'm excited. Thank you so much, Alan, for bringing that up. I think you've actually been talking about it for a couple of years, but I think it's time
since we started. Sure. Doing this,
you know? Yeah, I know. I think it's about time.
Yeah, so I think it's about time. That book was very important in this journey for me. You know, it's like we were discussing Reclaim Your Rapture. I think that one was important in the journey. And I recommended that one to my friend who's starting this journey, the one that's
Got me on that one, too.
Hopefully
McRae will get on that one, because I noticed he was...
Yeah, I don't. And, you know, I texted the guy that I told him about, and he's like, well, it's pretty interesting. And I was like, well, maybe that was too big of a leap from, like, just thinking you want to start on the path to that, but, you know, maybe it'll be a leap. And, you know, I was telling him, I said, hey, this journey will be interesting and painful, and, you know, but when you come out the other side of the main part, you know, it's a lifelong journey. It's not like, oh, you know, I've gotten to the point where I'm ascending, you know, like I'm the Buddha. It's not going to happen. But if we're working towards that, that's really the key. So I said, this journey is going to be long, arduous, painful. But every little breakthrough you have, no matter how small, is going to get you closer to being whole and dealing with the stuff that's been built up for years. And for him, you know, it was, like he said, it was seeing dead children really gave him PTSD, you know, as a homicide detective. Like, dead adults, he said, not that big a deal. But after seeing so many children that had been killed by their parents or whatever, that the trauma, and he can't get it out of his head. And so...
Well, it's what you were speaking to, Kyle, about the circumambulation. And each time that you pass around these experiences, they lose more and more energy over us more and more power. And they become less toxic that we're carrying. So, and I totally agree with you, dude. It's not going to end, not until we take our last breath.
Yeah,
I don't think it ever will end, because... and, you know, you guys know this, in any kind of recovery process, be it addiction or anything you want, it's whack-a-mole, and it reappears. And it reappears in another energetic form or another person. And it shows up again and again. And it's like, not until we're done. I heard a beautiful quote the other day. Somebody said this, and I totally agree. People keep showing up in our lives until we're done with their energy. And then when we're no longer put off, bothered, irritated, resentful, hateful of those individuals, that individual or a kind of individual or circumstance or situation, quit showing up because you've already worked through it,
right.
mm-hmm. not tried to avoid it. The more you try to avoid it, the more they're going to keep showing up. And this is thus the whole reason people, you know, I can never catch a break. You know, this always happens to me. Well, that's because it keeps showing up to teach us. And until we go headlong into it, we're not going to neutralize or diffuse that energy anymore. It's going to keep showing up.
That speaks to, and this was 25 years ago, I was helping build a brewery, and the owner just had zero patience. Like, everything was going wrong, and he would get so angry, like, yell at his wife. And I just looked at him and said, hey, everything that comes to you is trying to teach you a lesson.
Yep.
And I think, and this lesson is, you need some patience, you know, and realize that this anger and frustration is just prolonging this problem.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's like when I work on cars, if I get super frustrated, like I'm trying to do something and it's not working, I just walk away. I go out in the backyard, sit, relax, breathe, say, okay, go back to it with new eyes, new perception. And I remember he was screaming at his wife, and I'm just like, you know, who the hell talks to their wife that way? And then he started coming at me, and I said, you talk to me the way you talk to your wife. I'm not married to you, and I will leave, because you don't talk to anyone like this. And that, right. you know, and then the next brewery I was at, I remember the chef was on it. Everyone's like, you got to avoid him. He gets on these rampages and just screams at everyone. And he came, I heard him in the hallway, and he was yelling at everyone along the way. And he came into my office, and I looked at him and said, one word out of your mouth, I'm going to knock your ass out, because this problem is your problem. And you don't come yell at me about your problem. Yell at yourself. Go in the bathroom and look at yourself. So why is this happening to me? Because you are bringing this energy to you.
Yes.
You know?
They're bringing it
and
in.
And they don't, and you don't deal with it. And I think, you know, that I don't even know the word you're using, whatever it is. And you say, every time it gives you less energy. I don't know if that's necessarily true, because if you're feeding it again as it comes by,
you still haven't learned, and you still got another wheel to go.
So
you have another cycle.
Right, right. So
you got to keep going until you learn it. But but with that circumambulation, it's a spiral upward.
Mm-hmm.
So you're leaving it behind.
That's the goal, right?
Yeah, that's the goal. Classic scene in Christopher Nolan in The Dark Knight Returns is when
Dark Knight Rises.
Mm-hmm. When Christian Bale has to climb out of that cave, and you got to go step by step all the way around the outside, but it spirals upward to get him out. At some point, he has to cut that rope and take the leap of faith and just say, man, I don't know, but I can't do it with a rope. And that's that. That's that faith piece of looking into the abyss and saying, man, this frightens me, but I have to do it without a safety line.
Yeah.
Mm. And which is real representative of my old sense of self. How did I used to handle people like this? How did I always handled situations all my life like this? Well, maybe this time I have to take the leap of faith and just relax when I talk to this person and not go off like I always have, and try it and stretch myself.
Right.
So it's a cool. Oh, so
I think when you run into those people too, you know, what I found as I've gotten older is I just try to approach it with love. You know, like, especially people that are just, like, dark and negative, and, you know, I think they're trying to drag you into their thing, or they're angry and they want you to get angry, and you're just, like, treating it with love and be like, okay, yeah, I understand that, you know, and try to, like, turn it back, like, so why do you think that's going on with you, you know?
Right.
I hate seeing you in this pain. And, you know, I think they want you to be in the pain with them. Like, it's way easier to be sitting in your own stink than pull everyone else down, because there's this entropy. Like, it's way easier to be at this low energy state of negativity and everything sucks you know, then
it's easier.
It's good, you know. And you know, everyone said that, you know, everyone's like, life is hard. And I'm like, well, maybe. Maybe life is easy and we make it hard. Like,
amen.
You know, like, it's not that, you know, I remember seeing a John F. Kennedy quote saying that life is hard, you know. And he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. That guy never had a worry in the world until his head got shot, you know.
Right.
So I think that it's how you frame it. And, you know, it's funny, I'm not wearing black today, but, and a feng shui guy said that because of this fire horse year, and I know everyone's going to be like, fucking whatever, I can't wear black out in public because black for whatever, I'm a dragon in the Chinese thing, that this year I'll absorb energy from other, if you go into a crowd, if the energy is negative, I'll absorb all that energy. So, you know, they wear black. Like, I could have worn it today because this is a positive thing, I think. But I haven't worn black, which everyone knows I wear black constantly yet this year. So I got a whole year of not wearing black, which will be interesting. But yeah, so you just don't want to, you know, you got to just treat things with some grace and love, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you get around, like, the Eeyores of the world, you just got to be like, you know.
You get to a point where you pray into them.
Yeah.
You just pray for them.
Oh, I do that every night.
And move. It's like, wow. I like that, too, because you're through this work. Also, another thing is that a realization is you don't get, and you haven't been getting what you want. You get what you are, which I love that. I always often come back to that quote. And the energy you put off is what you get. The universe doesn't really give a fuck about you. It just gives you what you are. And no one's...
Right. And it does, you know, I think... if you align with it, like some people like, well, I have to align with it to get reward. But just think all the like people who do awful things and get rewards because they've aligned their energy. You know,
right.
It doesn't matter. Right. It's how you use that energy. You can use energy for bad things and be very successful at it. I mean, look at all the bankers of the world.
Hey, they're being authentic.
Right.
And that's their passion and they're being authentic.
Yeah, the authentic.
So that's great for them because that's their bliss is to do that. Yeah. So... hey, nothing, you know, nothing wrong.
So to me, you know, the energy should be for good. You know, like I think that you're rewarded by trying to be good and help people. Like the other day, I was in the garage cleaning it, and this truck pulls up, and this guy steps out and starts walking to the house. And usually I'm like, spidey senses, you know, I got a machete in there, I'm ready to, let's go, you know. And it was this dude, and he's like, hey, man, do you got anything that needs to be hauled off? And I'm like, unfortunately, I just ran to the dump not long ago, so I'm good. And he's like, yeah, he goes, and you know, he was older, he grew up here. He's like, I moved to Houston years ago. I came back here after my wife died. I'm living with my bipolar brother and the father who's in his 90s. He's like, I can't find any work. You know, I just need some money. And my wife's like looking out. And I said, so went in, grabbed some, you know, some money for him. And then, you know, he gave me a big hug. And it was super heartfelt. And it was really nice to be helpful. And then I said, hey, you know what? You need to put yourself first. I can tell that you're putting everyone ahead of you. And that's not going to be good for anyone. You know,
it's you first,
right? And it, you know, it seems like everyone's like, oh, that's so selfish, but it's not, because you cannot be someone to help other people on their path if you're a mess. and you're not doing self-care. So, you know, it's not selfish. It's actually the opposite. If you take care of yourself and you're in a good state, you're going to be able to help people way more.
Well, it's about, I think it's equal. It's all parts harmonious and equal. If a person is willing to give and give and give to somebody else, wouldn't you think also that's the same person that's willing to shirk all of their own responsibility? Right? There's got to be some equilibrium here. Right. So, and to the yin and yang within us.
Right.
I mean, there's a little there. Going back to the shadow work at the top of the hour here, Kyle, I mean, this is what we have to realize. If we run around in the world being Mr. Nice Guy all the time, what are we actually hiding? And what a part of it, and when will the demon come out? You know, and that's a frightening thing. And this is what Jordan Peterson always talks about, and having to really harness that monster within you. Yep. And then some people, oh, I'm Mr. Nice Guy, I couldn't think of hurting anybody. Bullshit. There is a little Hitler inside you, and you better know how much hatred, resentful, pain, and hurt is really in there that you've been protecting by acting the way that you have your whole life, and giving to other people, and being just showing up with all smiles. It's like there's something, because if you don't know, it's either that or they're going to just, you're going to be complacent and become a yes man or a woman all your life and just give away, and yes, that's all fine. Well,
that's a dangerous
society. That's a dangerous person, because now they're unpredictable, and that's not authentic, and that's frightening. So, you know, this work is going to be really, really cool in that component too, Kyle, and I'm really excited about. Can I show it one more time for our?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. Mastin Kip. There he is.
Yes.
Yeah, I hope.
I'm stoked.
I wonder, what does Mastin Kip think of this? See what you're up to, Kyle?
Or? Well, Kyle will at him when we do it. At Mastin Kip. Hey, dude.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. That would be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
Anyhow, nice guy thing, and this, I think we should probably wrap it up after we discuss this a little bit. That nice guy thing goes to the boundaries. You know, Jordan Peterson was talking about the people who actually know that they can be excessively violent if need be. To me, that's important. Like, that's a boundary, no matter what it is. Like, you know, I'm not saying, you know, someone offends you, you go knock the shit out of them, but you need to be able to do that if you need to. You know, being nice and nice and nice, and then most people just snap. They finally get to the point that I'm sick of being nice, and then they have a meltdown, you know.
Whereas
I can absorb a lot before I snap, but when I do snap, it's frightening. Like, I've scared. I remember years ago, my mountain biking buddy saw me snap one time on some kid who was trying to steal my bike, and they were like, "You were the most frightening human I've ever seen." And I said, "Yeah, you get to this point where you're done, and when you're done with the bullshit, and the people keep feeding you the bullshit, then you got to do what you got to do." You know, I don't want to hurt anybody, but if someone's coming to hurt me, you know, I'm standing my ground. I love, you know, if someone comes to hurt someone I love or care about, no, it's not, that's it. You know, like, my wife has a friend who years ago said she would rather be raped and murdered by someone coming into her house than kill that person. And I'm like,
huh?
No. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not, you know, it's like, I'm not advocating for violence. I mean, I'm very kind of a peaceful
guy. But you have a boundary.
Right.
And it's better than the person that will turn around and go, "Oh my gosh, I don't know where that part of me came from.
Right.
I don't know where that's not me." Bullshit, yeah, it's not you.
Yeah.
It is you. So to
harness it.
To harness it, right. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But that's what's. There's a. Yeah, there's a line that Peterson always uses from the Bible, and it's those who have swords and know how to use them but keep them sheathed will inherit the world. You know, so it's about having that sword and knowing how to use it, but like keep it sheathed, you know, because I think that there's a lot of self-mastery and there's a lot of self-control that goes into that, of like recognizing that there is that monster inside of us. And like, you know, and I think it also comes to the point of like, don't mistake my kindness for weakness, you know, like don't think that just because I'm kind to you doesn't mean that like I you know, right. I know how to burn bridges as effectively as anyone else does, you know, but I think that there's looking at like the Stoics, you know, it's just that self-mastery, you know, like being able to, you know, like you were saying, that kind of boundary, but being able to really rein that in and use it only if it's like absolutely necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good stuff. Yeah. I love it, guys.
All right, what are we grateful for?
Okay, well, I'm grateful. You know, I was thinking, so I had shingles this week on my head. It was very painful, but not what I expected. Like everyone else told me, it's like agonizing, the worst thing that ever happened. And I think I'm grateful that I have a really robust immune system. So this was just an inconvenience more than anything, an itchy inconvenience and a headache, which I never get headaches, but I had a headache for like 3 days before. So I knew something was coming on. So I'm glad that I eat right, supplement right, take care of myself on a lot of levels, and that this was not as bad as it could have been. I was talking to one of our former bandmates about a guy that played drums in his band after we had left, and his dad had shingles on the face, and it was so painful for him that they were going to cut the nerve to his face so he didn't have to deal with the pain. So mine was just an inconvenience, and so that makes me grateful. This morning I was thinking, I was just grateful I have a roof over my head and money in the bank, and you know, all the things that make life a little easier. Water, clean water, functioning plumbing, you know, just basics of life that make you not have to think about, you know, having to knocking on people's doors to haul garbage so you can make a little money, you know. I was like, man, I'm blessed, you know, and every night I always do my gratitudes and prayers, and I'm like, prayed for that dude, said, man, you know, hopefully the universe will give him more. And then, you know, I'm just grateful that the sun is kind of out. I think the guys who spray that crap in the sky have been very active the past few days, because it was supposed to be sunny and nice for the past few days, and it starts out, and then all of a sudden it's weird gray clouds.
No.
So not natural. So, but that's tinfoil hat is
looking better and better all the time, isn't it? I'm going to be that guy.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I'm grateful for my gym, that I do have steam and dry sauna to sort of detoxify. On that note, that's a big part of my workout, and the people that I meet in that environment at the gym, very positive, very uplifting. It's just great to go there and to be around like-minded individuals that are just really care about themselves. All these men and women are just like, they're good moods, and it's just uplifting. So I'm very, very grateful for that I have that in my life. It's a big part of that. I'm grateful for you guys. I'm grateful for this think tank, because this is a great way to think through a lot of these ideas. And, of course, work is work, and that's a beautiful lifestyle, too. So it's another thing I'm grateful for, man. I mean, all of it combined. But I'm grateful for my sisters two of my sisters in my family. I'm grateful for my whole family. They're awesome. But two, we have breakfast together once in a while, and it's just great. Love it.
Nice.
So that's mine.
Alrighty. I am grateful. Oh. Yeah, so like I was saying earlier, so I did I've been doing a lot of work on myself this last month, and I'm very grateful for some of the conclusions that I came to around some of the shit that I've been dealing with over the last several years. And I'm very grateful for the tools that I have at my disposal that kind of helped me work through that. So the you know, my neurooptimal machine, my neurofeedback machine, and my ability to kind of be like introspective and to I'm grateful for like my ability to be able to lean into discomfort and to kind of embrace the suck as like a natural part of life. And I've been really engaged lately in like, well, I've been thinking a lot lately about the ways that I engage in the world from a place of like unworthiness. And so like, I'm grateful for this, like this belief that I am enough right now. And just like I'm grateful for like the work that I've done to like get to that, you know, that feeling that like I am enough and that I have enough and that I'm doing enough with my life. You know, and not leaning into some of that like inadequacy that I've definitely fallen prey to before. And, I'm grateful for all the opportunities and blessings that I have in the future. And, yeah, that's what I got. Yeah. Nice. I'm in a deep place of gratitude lately.
Beautiful.
For sure.
Beautiful.
Okay. Well, yeah. Thank you, gentlemen, so much for this talk. Like I said, for all the viewers, we got some cool stuff coming up here. I'm going to speak to McCray, see if we can get him on this kick with us, and I'm sure he will, whether he wants to or not. He's coming. So I think we're going to have a lot of fun with that. If all the viewers, check us out on YouTube at The Lighter Minds. Check us out on Instagram at The Lighter Mind on there. Give us a like, give us a follow. That really helps kind of support the page and what we're trying to do, kind of, you know, broaden this message out to, you know, more people. And if you have anyone in your life that you think would be interested in any of this kind of stuff, you know, hey, go check out The Lighter Mind, you know, bring them into the conversation with us, you know, the more the merrier. But yeah, everyone just make sure you're tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode.
All right, who's got the bowl? Kyle, pass me the bowl.